I'm Anka from MedRise Studio, and this is the place to be to hear about the latest Web3 trends in healthcare. Today, we are venturing at the intersection of synthetic biology and the fascinating world of decentralized science. Joining us is Morgan Richards from Valley DAO, a pioneering organization that leverages the diverse expertise of its community to support research in the field of climate change. This changes a little bit from our traditional healthcare talks, but this is also a very interesting topic that I'm so excited to get into. Just so you know, projects funded by Valley DAO leverage biological organisms to sustainably manufacture products such as animal-free meat, nutrients, clothes, fuels, fertilizers, and so much more. Morgan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Anka. Really happy to be here. And yeah, it's exciting that it's a little bit different from your usual subject, but I assure you, it will not be boring.
I'm pretty convinced of that, but we might have to go back to the basics on this one. Synthetic biology stands at the intersection of nature and technology, and it's often described as sort of the engineering of biological systems. So for our listeners who are new to this field, and for myself as well, could you demystify what synthetic biology is in a very, very simple way?
Yes. Synthetic biology is a relatively new field. And essentially what it's trying to do is make biology easier to engineer. So over the years, we discovered the kind of building blocks of life and the different tools that we can use. So those are things like genes encode for proteins. And those proteins can be used to catalyze reactions or digest things. And we use those proteins and the reactions that happen as a result of them as tools. And we can build systems that we can design from the ground up to be able to solve different problems, whether that's in human health, things like vaccinations, but also gene therapies. But what we're particularly interested in is the applications for climate, environment, and sustainability. So in an attempt to make it more kind of tractable and more easy to engineer, what people have tried to do is do what people did in the beginning when engineering itself started becoming a popular discipline. And one of the most important components of that is standardization. So in the same way we have standardized screw threads, we are trying to build like the equivalent for biology. So we build parts, these building blocks that can almost be combined like Legos. And the idea is that if you can simplify that process enough and make things very modular, very compatible, then you as an engineer or a designer of a system have much more creative freedom in what you can address and what problems you can solve. So it's all about starting from the very basics and the beginning, trying to make these building blocks of life so that we can then actually go out and build, for example, a computational interface or an operating system where you could go and just drag and drop things that you wanted your organism to do and then one day eventually print it on an actual biological printer. So it sounds crazy. It sounds science fiction. And honestly, when I got into it, I thought, no, this is not real. But it definitely is. And although kind of at the early stages of the inception of this field, and we're still already seeing huge impact from it. So yeah, I think it's super exciting. And I think you already listed some of the amazing applications that people are looking at with synthetic biology. So the possibilities are endless, really.
And what you just presented, is that an example of the type of projects that Valley DAO is funding?
Yeah, so we are, as you mentioned at the beginning, we are particularly interested in things that relate to climate remediation, environmental sustainability, and food security. So things that are essential for life to continue, or life as we know it as a human civilization to continue. And one of the amazing things about biology is it's a almost lossless system. Like you go out into the rainforest, and you don't see wastage of energy anywhere. Everything is decomposed and converted into something else. And that's really a core principle of biology that we want to leverage when we're talking about synthetic biology for these types of applications. I think if we can rationally like take some of those inspirations, take some of those building blocks, and then use them to, let's say, produce plastic that is biodegradable or completely biodegradable, or plastic that is produced not from petrochemicals, but that is produced from like orange peels, like wasted orange peels or something, these are the types of things that we're interested in funding. And I can give one example of a project that we funded. It's with Imperial College London, and it is essentially trying to develop a yeast strain for producing microbial lipids. So microbial lipids are fats and oils that are produced and secreted from, well, actually they're not secreted, but this is part of the interesting part of the project. They are usually produced and then stored within the cell to use as energy storage. But what this project that we're funding looks to do is create a process where those lipids can be secreted, which makes them easier to extract. So if you can imagine having a big bioreactor and all of these cells producing this oil, well, usually what you would have to do is then like stop the culture, kill the cells, like break them open and then extract the oils and filter that out. So instead of doing that, we can engineer a system so that they secrete those oils and then we can collect them, keep the cells alive and have that process running continuously. So that's like kind of the key concept of the project itself. And the applications are really wide as well, which is the exciting part. So the microbial lipids can be tuned. We can have different fat compositions, different molecules that are of interest to different industries. So we can look at cosmetics is a really big one as well. But we can also look at producing biofuels, food oils. So I think our first application that we're looking at is a replacement to palm oil, which I'm sure many people know is a hugely destructive industry. So yeah, like there's a ton of applications from this one project, and that's one of the things that makes synthetic biology really exciting.
It's interesting that you mentioned Imperial College, because I'm curious to understand, why are they working with a DAO instead of going the traditional healthcare / science route for funding? And the underlying question is, what are some of the challenges and pitfalls of traditional science that you're trying to address with ValleyDAO?
Yeah, great questions. So I'd say the reason they work with us is because of what we can offer them beyond just the funding. So a lot of the traditional organizations that are funding research will give you checks and then they'll check up on you, which is kind of, you know, that it's not always the most helpful thing. So what we really want to do and what we're doing differently is being able to provide that whole network and like suite of expertise with a particular focus on commercializing the research. So we don't just provide the funding, but we're also providing hands-on advice, guidance, and commercial support so that as the project is progressing, and even from the very beginning, we are carving out that commercial pathway to ensure its success once the technology itself is developed. And this is kind of where, and this is the biggest problem we want to address. This is where most technologies get stuck. You know, they're developed in the lab. There's some key concepts proven. But when it comes to commercialization, either the funding is not available or accessible, or the expertise, the network, and the ability to actually translate that. It's a completely different skill set that's needed. And sometimes that can be the researchers with a bit of guidance and training. Sometimes it just needs to be someone else. And that's one of the key things that we can provide as a decentralized community, is access to all of the relevant people that can make it happen, and also be able to incentivize our community to have, like, you know, vested interest in those projects succeeding. So that's something that I think is different in the way that we're approaching the problem, but also gives the extra incentive of universities working with us to be able to actually commercialize that research. It's a crazy statistic, but I think over 99% of all research or of all patents filed never recoup the cost of filing the patent. So, I mean, it sounds ridiculous. You just think like how much money and time is being wasted. But science, especially in the academic sense, can be very inefficient when trying to translate the research. And so there is an incentive for not just us as a DAO, but many organizations to work with universities and especially their tech transfer offices to increase the real world kind of like translatable output of that research.
And you mentioned the fact that you need a lot of different people with a lot of different skills in this community, because I can only imagine, if I take the example of the yeast project that you're working on, you need people that are knowledgeable on this topic so they can assess the project and know if it's viable or not. Then you maybe also need people who are experts in finance and different types of expertise. How do you bring these people together? What attracts them in the project, in ValleyDAO? And how do you make sure to incentivize your community to take part in the research and the projects?
Yeah, great questions again. So I think, like, starting from the very beginning, why do people join ValleyDAO? Why do they want to be a part of the community? And I think you have to ask yourself, why does anyone want to be part of any community? It's usually, or at least from my perspective, and I've had, I guess, a couple of years now almost of community building. It's usually people are there because they want to feel a sense of belonging to something bigger than themselves or bigger than the individual projects that they're working on. And I think in academia, you can get very laser focused on that tiny thing that you're working on, but it's often difficult to see how that fits into the bigger picture. So one of the key things that attracts people to our community is our communication style, our messaging, and how we actually communicate our values, not just from a professional perspective, but also on an individual basis. Like, people in the community really care about each other. They really care about the mission and what we're ultimately trying to do. And I think that's not only an attractant to other people to join the community, but it's the reason people stick around and stay as well. So having that ability to really understand what brings people together, and it's always much bigger than a professional goal. Like, of course, people want to find a collaborator, or they want to find expertise to help them with their research. But more than that, they want to belong to something, and we have a mission that is, it's easy to want to belong to solving climate issues, especially in the current kind of situation we're in as a human society. So I think lots of people are just frustrated. They care a lot and they want to see their work being part of something much bigger. And so what ValleyDAO obviously does is then provide that platform for people to come together, align on values. And I mean, people don't always necessarily agree about the small things, but we all hold this kind of key message in our hearts. And then another big thing that really keeps people around and motivated is the incentive structures. So, I mean, this is part of the reason that we are a DAO and not any other kind of organization, is because we're able to, like, directly incentivize participation using our governance token as a reward for people contributing their time. So there's lots of different ways you can earn that token. And there's lots of different kind of work focus groups that we have within the DAO that are doing lots of different things. So we have a communications growth group. Those are looking at, obviously, communications, social media, writing articles, and educating people about the field and what we're doing. Then we have the products growth group, which is what I'm spearheading at the moment. And we have the deal flow growth group as well. And those are really focused on, like, finding the best research projects, evaluating them, and making sure that they're ready to commercialize once we do fund them. All of these kind of things make a really interesting and dynamic community that's not only a community that shares values and you know, people actually like each other, but we have a goal as well. And that goal is very clearly communicated. And people know what they have to do or what they should do in order to help us reach that goal. And they have a vested interest in us achieving.
If I understand correctly, you need people who are motivated and who want to make a change. And I guess we all want to do that. So I think it's easy to find this type of people, but you not only need people who are motivated, you also need people who are skilled in the specific area you're trying to tackle. How do you find those people?
Yeah, no, that's a great question as well. So it depends on the need at the time and what we're looking for. Quite often, for example, in DealFlow, we'll have a specific project come in and we might not necessarily have the direct expertise to tackle that ourselves. So we'll go out, and because we have the surface area of the community, you know, we're always one or two warm connections away from the expert in that field. So that's one of the other benefits, is that we don't necessarily have to know everybody ourselves, but the community, as this kind of like institution, does have access to those resources and those people. So we're able to leverage that and find those people. If it's just in terms of general work skills, for example, in the product growth group, right now we're looking for more people that are developers that also have a bit of a background and understanding in science. You know, sometimes we would just go to different communities, reach out to people. We attend lots of conferences and events throughout the year. So there's never a shortage of flow into the DAO. And then our job really as leaders is to find the best people, but then also bring out the best in those people. And I think that's the much harder thing to do, especially when you come into this world, you don't know much about Web3, you don't know much about DAOs. it can all be very overwhelming, and it's easy for people to just kind of give up or, you know, not feel like they really understand and get it and they're really aligned with the motivations. So I'd say that's like biggest learning of 2023 is really how to get the best out of people and make sure that we're all singing from the same hymn sheet.
And do you find it easier to attract the crypto / Web3 crowd or the more scientific crowd?
Definitely the latter. Perhaps it's because our core team is entirely made up of scientists. So we all have that background before we had a Web3 interest and background. And so, you know, it's something that we really value. It comes across in the way that we communicate, the kinds of people that we knew before coming into the project as well. So I'd say, yeah, we definitely have a strong focus on that side. And ultimately, we need more people on that side because those are the people that are delivering direct value for the project and creating value for the ecosystem and the token as well. So that's something that like we definitely have a focus on. In terms of we are actively trying to figure out better ways to engage and leverage the Web3 community as well. But it can be hard because it seems like at times people are singing from completely different sides of the ocean. And we're trying to find some kind of harmony in that and find how can we use these two groups together to achieve the same mission. They're both there. They both care about the mission, but they have different incentives and motivations on the personal level and the professional level as well. So that's something we're still trying to balance.
And once you take on a project, I guess there are different outcomes that can happen, whether it is a patent or a proof of concept or even a spin-off or different things. What do you call success? What's a successful project for Validao?
Yeah, so we have kind of two main focuses at the moment, although that may expand as time goes forwards. First one is that we will fund an academic research project. So these are like quite large checks that we would give out, anything from $50,000 to $250,000. And that covers like up to a 2-year project, a academic institution with overheads, with hiring a researcher to spend their full time on it. And of course, the reagents and everything that's needed for that project. In terms of the success there, we give the money in hope that we're going to develop some kind of interesting IP. And we'll do a lot of the kind of groundwork to figure out contingency plans, like because it's science at the end of the day, we don't know what we're going to find in the end. So we have at least several different options of ways that we can go. And especially with the focus on the IP, we want to develop something that is maybe slightly more broadly applicable. So the example being the yeast engineering project, where there's lots of different verticals and markets that we could penetrate with that project. So even if one of them didn't work out, we could pivot and move to another. So we really try and bake these things into the research project itself. And that's part of the process of the application and giving the funding. And another reason for people to work with us is because we're trying to co-create the project so that it becomes something that will ultimately be viable. So that's the IP side. And then on the other side, we have like startups. And this is something that we maybe didn't initially think so much about because we were very focused on the research side, but realizing the value that we can provide to startups as well was quite an eye opener. So we took on board a research project, it was a piece of IP that was already at a university. And then we helped them hire a team and formalize everything. They didn't have strong intentions of commercializing that research. It was just sat there kind of gathering dust. And now they've gone on to raise, I think, over $500,000 from the Bioinnovation Institute as a non-dilutive grant. So that's really great for them. That's going to get them up and off the ground. And it's really exciting to see already in less than a year, the momentum that project has generated. So success to us overall, to kind of like summarize all of that, is really about accelerating research outcomes. And whether that's IP, we're maybe less interested on the publication side of things because we're looking at translational science and how we can use these technologies to benefit people's lives. So whether it's IP, whether it's a company, or even just like if it becomes a nonprofit foundation or something like that, that is actually still delivering value to the ecosystem as a whole, then I would class those as successes and things that we would love to have a role to play in.
Well, thank you so much, Morgan. I wish you all the successes that you're looking for in the project. Thank you so much for explaining to us what synthetic biology is. And it's quite mind-blowing to know all the possible applications. I really had no idea that you could do all these things. And I really encourage the people who are listening to us to go take a look at your website and your social channels and everything and try to scroll through it and read some of the things that you guys are posting. It's so interesting. You might not understand everything, but it's really fascinating. So thank you so much for your time. It was lovely having you on the show.
Thank you, Anka. It was a pleasure. And yeah, if anything is too hard to understand, then we're more than happy to explain it to people as well. So feel free to join our community and find someone that can help you out.
That's it for today. As always, I will see you soon for another Web3 adventure in healthcare.